Welcome to Marketing Horizons, a program within the WVU Marketing Communications Today podcast series. Marketing Horizons looks ahead to the new ideas, technologies, tools, and strategies that are emerging to help marketers prepare for what's next. Join co-hosts Ruth Stevens and Cindy Greenglass as they explore upcoming marketing trends with marketers who are leading the way. Thank you for joining us.
Ruth, I'm excited we have the chance today to speak with Farouk Heppelvent, the founder and CEO of The Scope Studio in Hamburg, Germany today. Farouk is joining us to discuss CGI-driven strategies in advertising and marketing. A CGI, or computer-generated imagery, is an amazing technology that we really need to learn more about from a marketing perspective. We're used to seeing it in film. As you know, some industry categories like fashion and automotive are very creative, have deep pockets. So they've been leaders with these new tools. And Farouk has offered to share how some of the big brands are combining technology with creative strategies to launch CGI-driven advertising globally. Should we welcome Farouk?
Yes, let's get him in here. Farouk, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
So I'm going to kick off with a pretty elementary question. Mm-hmm. What is CGI? I know it stands for computer generated imagery, but how is this different from the other AI tools that seem to be locking into the marketing toolkit recently? Please fill us in.
Yeah, well, essentially, CGI compared to AI is, since last year, it's the old school computer graphics solution. You know, CGI has been around for quite a long time. And you could, you could say AI is something that maybe is a continuation of CGI in certain areas. But, you know, the biggest difference is with classic CGI, essentially we're trying to mimic a real production, right? So in our case, it's cars. So we build locations, we put the car there, we light it, and render out either still images or film. My background is photography, so we always strive to create something that is very similar to real-life production. This is what we've been working on, well, over 10 years. And we came to a point where we feel pretty comfortable with the output that we generate, that it feels photorealistic. What AI offers is something where marketers, individuals can create imagery on their own without needing to know the tools, which most people in my market are kind of afraid of. I'm not. Because to create an image, except for, let's say, you do a nice post on Instagram or LinkedIn, or you need an image that illustrates a more simple situation. When you look at a higher level marketing needs, you need more control. Cannot be so random, I think. And in my experience, the briefs that marketers put together are so complex and so detailed. And so, there's so much legal connected to it that AI in those cases will be help. And it helps. We use AI in our pipeline.
Right.
And it was called machine learning before ChatGPT came out. It was kind of AI, but it's pretty much the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. And we use it to simplify tasks for us. So we always look at things, say, oh, can a machine do that? Can we automate it? Then let's do that. And let's keep the mental resources of our team members to do more creative work.
Right.
So I think, you know, that's a good thing, right? With the new AI tools like Midjourney, DALL-E, all these things, we use that for inspiration or, you know, getting layouts done quickly. It's okay. It's interesting. And I see more and more people that actually offer professional prompting. So, you know, they use Midjourney to produce imagery for a client, which is also, I think it's an interesting creative place to be. But as an idea, I think especially for your audience, I would encourage everybody to play with it and enjoy it, because I read something very interesting the other day that when we are 5 years old, we're the most creative. Because, you know, our capabilities rise, so we can do more. But it's pre, you know, system optimization by society, let's say, right?
Yes.
So anything is possible. and after that, you know, we kind of learn what we cannot do.
Mm-hmm.
So we lose courage and stop doing things.
Mm-hmm. That makes
sense. And AI gives all of us this playful state back, right? You can say, oh,
wow.
Yeah, whatever it is, right? So you can, I mean, we've seen a lot of crazy stuff being done with AI, but for somebody who thought that is a great picture, it was a great picture. But they might not have been able to create it in Photoshop and photography and illustration, all these things. So as much as there is, you know, business pressure, let's say, for creators like us in the broader market, I think it can be a very good.
I think that's great. That's encouraging
outlet.
To hear that there is a way that AI can fit into our creative portfolio and encourage us to be playful and creative once again. If we can pivot back to CGI now that we have a better idea of the differences between the two. I mean, we're learning a lot. AI augments so many different tools we're all comfortable using or learning to use. Can you tell us a bit about how CGI can empower marketers and enable us to create these campaigns that stand out in a saturated market? What does CGI give to us as marketers that's uniquely different than a standard illustrator or commercial, let's say, a TV commercial?
Well, you know, you can CGI. The way we look at it is a production tool. So it's a camera. And there's all kinds of different artistic styles that people produce. Ours is photorealistic. We're focused on cars, but there are people who do fantastic stuff in the realm of fashion. You know, Nike, Adidas, these people have been using it a lot just to explore even, you know, more interesting visuals and go back from super authentic to super artificial, just, you know, open up new worlds. And I think doing that with CGI has the advantage that you have control over this world and you create it and you can keep producing in it, which is important for in the car world. It is important. And, you know, in the area that we are operating in, when we do car launches, the cars are secret. So you cannot, you know, it's a big deal to actually get them out on the street.
Huh.
And he used to be a car photographer, so I actually was out there on location shooting. And the manufacturers, when you're traveling with a secret car, they're sending 2 security people. I mean, like, these are serious. I mean, these are people trained to protect people. They protect the car from being photographed, which is, you know, crazy in itself. But, you know, just, you know, imagine the situation. You have a car that is secret and you don't want, and there is actually a thing. Car paparazzi, right? So, it is a thing. It's real.
It's a thing. Wow.
It's a thing. So, you know, you try to protect a car from being photographed, and the reason is not necessarily that your competitor is going to copy the car. The reason is you want to control the marketing message, how, you know, how the car is perceived, how the car is seen the first time when you launch it.
Right. That makes sense.
And so doing that on location is a big challenge. Then it limits your choices of locations. You know, you need to transport the car, protect the car. Just imagine shooting a secret car in a city. It's pretty much impossible.
This is so interesting. So far I've heard from you two enormous benefits for marketers with this technology. One, it allows us to go back to our five-year-old creativity level.
Yeah, yeah.
And two, it's it allows us some privacy and secrecy in our content development as marketing communicators. But I thought you were going to say that another big benefit is cost. Is that where you're going next?
Well, you know, it's cost up to a certain point. I mean, obviously, depending on which studio you work with. In AI, yes, obviously, it's a given, right? If you can create your assets for a $20 subscription, that's unbeatable. And it will be unbeatable. And that is also why a lot of people in the market are, you know, hurting with what's going on.
Yeah.
At the same time, I had a conversation on LinkedIn. I forwarded something, and interesting thought is, so in the year 2000, Kodak processed, I think, I forget the numbers, but let's say, 2 billion pictures, right? And there were like 10,000 professional photographers in the market, in whichever market.
Okay.
And then digital photography came along, and the amount of digital photographers quadrupled because it was easier to get into the market. It was easier to get, do all these things, right? Do mistakes. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. You didn't have to pay for film. You didn't, you know, many, many things happened at the same time. And the need for imagery exploded at the same time through the internet. There was one point where, you know, it's like, I don't know exactly when, but the amount of all printed processed film pre-digital photography was as much as people uploaded to the internet first in a week, then in a day, then in a minute, and then in a second. Yeah, actually, we're below a second now, I would say.
Oh,
right?
Man.
So the amount of imagery is exponentially overwhelming. And that's also, you know, with the AI-generated imagery, it will help a lot of people to visualize things, make their postings better, right? Do all these things for very little cost. But it's eating the market from below. This is how I see it, right? So non-users become users.
Mm-hmm.
My example is I'm not a very good copywriter. And actually, that, you know, I tended just not to write, right? I mean, obviously, I write emails, but my postings were kind of, you know, only images. And with I'm using Jasper, and it's, you know, it's a foreign language. You make mistakes, you're insecure. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Grammarly and Jasper helped me not to sound crazy to native speakers half the time, you know, or like an idiot because I'm forgetting a comma and, you know, they're doing everything wrong all the time. So it's incredibly helpful. Because, you know, essentially I'm saying the same thing, but before, and I, you know, I can just imagine what it is when somebody says something in German, it's just not accurate. You're like,
Well,
not so smart.
So if this technology brings a new level of production and creativity that we didn't have prior to, you know, the development of digital assets. And we know that CGI has been around, you know, since the 70s or there, you know, and continues to evolve. Can this be applied to those of us that don't have the big Hollywood or the big car budgets? How does a typical marketer in a SMB, a small to mid-sized business, make use of something like this? Is it even possible? The way you were talking about oh, I've got a digital camera on my little, you know, phone, and I can shoot some pretty amazing stuff. Can you do that with CGI?
Yeah. I mean, it, and also, this is something CGI is becoming much more accessible lately. And there is, you know, anybody wants to try it out themselves and, you know, play with things. Adobe has this suite called Substance 3D. And there was originally was just a texture tool and, you know, development. They have something that's called Stager, which we are not using that, but it's kind of like a, you know, phone camera, very good phone camera compared to a, you know, a professional camera. Mm-hmm. We need the professional out because we have pipelines running and, you know, we need to produce differently so we can always go back and do a million things. But with the Substance package, which, you know, I would, if somebody wants to experiment with it, I would suggest to take a look at that.
Thank you.
And you can also, you know, there is like libraries where you can purchase three-dimensional assets, right? So it's called TurboSquid. It's an American company that was acquired by Getty Images. TurboSquid. Yeah, crazy name. CG people,
squid?
You know?
Right.
Yeah, Squid.
Getty.
But there you can go and say, oh, I need a rocket. And then you find a 3D rocket. Then you grab this 3D rocket and, you know, create a picture with it or an animation. And, you know, when we started, you had to go and model the rocket yourself. So, you know, the market is getting broader. So you're able to have, you know, stock libraries. And then you have AIs that are specialized in generating 3D models. So that is happening. And then you can combine it. But for a marketer, I think the most interesting thing about CG is maybe investing some money in whatever their product is to create what's called a digital twin. So let's assume you're a manufacturer of coffee cups. So these days, it's not so difficult to get a 3D model of your coffee cup. Even if you don't have 3D people, you can hire that out pretty easily through the freelance networks. And then you have a digital copy. And that you can then put into a studio setting, a you know, landscape setting, create an animation. So you have your asset, your product is always available, always stable, and you can go in and keep producing assets for the media needs that you have.
So do they do that when you see film and you see, you know, how they have product placement? How often is the product actually real, and how much of it is a digital twin that's been placed in situ?
There is a lot of digital twins in films and TV. And the interesting thing is there is a gentleman that is creating YouTube videos because there's directors like Christopher Nolan. He's like, no, I didn't use CGI, right? There's a no CGI rap on the street. But in reality, they use CGI, but they call it VFX. However, so there's like this big Marvel, incredible, everything CGI world. And then there is, you know, they use it as a tool. And we say, well, you know, we're like the true men in black, because if we're successful, nobody knows we're there.
Wow. Now, I have a question about this new stuff I'm seeing anyway, in mostly in the fashion world, where a gigantic handbag is lined up on the streets of Paris and so forth. And I feel the first time I see it, it's pretty eye-popping. But then the second time is kind of ho-hum. What do you say to marketers about how to avoid such?
Yeah, it's mistakes? You know, it's like gimmicky, right? So it's and also there's like, you know, I have to say, I'm not the youngest either. There is stuff that doesn't resonate with us, right? So, but with, you know, younger generation, they have such a different approach also to visual interaction, because, you know, my kids, they grew up with much more computer time, iPhones, iPads, video games. So there's a video game aesthetic that feels correct to them. And,
yeah,
you know, for my generation, it's, oh, it needs to be a Hollywood film. That is the benchmark. For them, that's not the benchmark. Video games is a good visual point. Benchmark for them. So they're not afraid of seeing reality mixed with some stuff that's artificial. That is nothing that throws them off necessarily.
Yeah.
Depends really on your product and on your target audience.
Got it. Well, that's a very good point. Thank you.
We're going to run out of time with you, Farouk, and there's so much more we'd love to talk about. I know.
Already.
If I could impose on you to ask you, Ruth and I are just wondering if you'd like to touch on any of the ethical or societal or legal or consumer, you know, behavior ramifications that we always are concerned about, you know, deep fakes and consumer trust around what's real and what's not. Yeah. We'd love to hear your point of view on that.
I think it's very dangerous, and I agree with many people who say it needs to be regulated. Mm. Oh, it needs to be that, you know, the law needs to be figured out. And there is a lot of conversations and lawsuits already happening in the United States where, you know, because to train these machines, you need to show them things. And obviously they have used stuff without permission. And that's why Getty, for example, has their own AI, because they said it's trained and people, you know, get actually paid for it. I think that's the first one that is very, very important. The deepfake situation is bad, but in my opinion, all the filters on Instagram are very bad as well. I mean, you know, we're seeing statistics, the outcome, what it did to the young generation, to their self, you know, regarding their self-esteem.
Yeah.
Big problem, I think, for societies in general, that you know, people spend too much time on social media. Social media itself is, you know, I'm afraid my kids are going to say what, you know, I told my parents, like, you were smoking in the car while I was sitting in the back. You know, everybody was smoking. Everybody was smoking all the time. Mm-hmm. Right. My father would get upset when there was a non-smoking row on the plane. He's like, what's going on? You know, it's like, that was so different. And, you know, I'm kind of afraid our kids are going to be like, social media, how could you do that to us? Right?
Yeah.
It's, and AI obviously amplifies what's going on in social media. Because, you know, the general deepfake and all these things, you know, back in 1910, you know, whatever, 1930s, Stalin was already retouching Lenin out of pictures. I mean, you know, the faking stuff, that is always, the guys were on it already. Back
then,
the first time it was possible, they did it. They retouched. So, yeah, you see?
Well, this has been a fascinating discussion. I am so sorry we've run out of time, but thank you so much, Farouk, for your contribution today.
Thank you very much. Thank you for taking time. Looking forward to the episode. Yeah.
Cindy, wasn't that eye-opening? Farouk gave us such a better sense of what is CGI versus what is AI, and the encouragement to try this stuff out for ourselves. And then he brought in that charming idea about we're at our most creative when we're 5 years old.
Yes.
Didn't you love that? Fascinating. And that AI allows us to get back to our most creative state.
That, you know, up until 5, we're pre-societal influenced, and, you know, we lose our courage as we get beyond 5. That's so sad, isn't it? So that AI gives us all an opportunity to go back to a more playful state and experiment. And then he did clear up for us that, you know, basically CGI is a production tool. It's a photo realism production tool. That's, you know, obviously based on using computer technology to do so. And we can overlay some of the AI for ideation, which is great, but then apply it to CGI in the production and creation of some of these outputs that we're doing. So that was really interesting.
And so helpful, because he gave us some actual suggested tools for us to use to play around with. The Adobe suite called Substance 3D,
yes,
and the Turbo Squid library. And then, of course, he suggested that we want to create a 3D digital copy of our the products that we're taking to market with a digital twin. That is a concept that's been around for quite a while now, but I love to have it in this context of becoming a base for all kinds of photographic imagery with different variations and ability to make changes. So, different colors and other playing around
placing
with
it,
the product
putting
itself.
It into different locations, doing different things with it. I know that you had pushed to understand the cost implications. You wanted Farouk to mention, is this more cost-effective CGI versus, the traditional photography? And, off camera, he did talk about that a little bit with us, pun intended, off camera, where he did say, well, yes, it's cost effective to be able to use those digital twins instead of having to have, the red coffee mug, the white coffee mug, the green coffee mug. There's lots of ways your product can be iterated using this technology that is more cost effective. Obviously, at the big production scale he's doing. He brought up a different idea that I never even thought of, which was the privacy and secrecy.
Indeed. Wow. But thinking about
it never
product launches, this was a huge, huge benefit of these technologies. And then I was also very impressed that he had a strong opinion about the societal, legal, ethical, and so forth implications here. And he came down very clearly saying that this stuff is dangerous and it needs to be regulated. And he also reminded us that the audience is different from age groups like ours. Cindy, wasn't that a helpful
insight
for us
to
have?
His concern about the societal impact and how he compared that, social media is going to be like the smoking of a previous generation. How could you allow us to be exposed to it? And, our children are going to say, how did you allow us to be so exposed to all this negative social media and Instagram and all the negative influences? And, with good comes bad, right? And this requires us to be more thoughtful and, regulation versus non-regulation, we know is a big debate. How much should a government get involved in what we do versus how much should we self-regulate in the industry ourselves? We know it's wrong. Should we regulate ourselves, meaning the industry, about what we know is particularly wrong? And so I did think that that was reassuring to hear somebody on the cutting edge of technology saying, yes, but we do have a problem here and we really do need to think about the implications of it. So,
and also one who is encouraging young people to get into this and discover their five-year-olds, rediscover their five-year-old selves. And that's an inspiration for the students
Absolutely.
Who are listening to our podcast, too.
So, when he mentioned that the visual benchmarks for the generation, whether that's the millennials, the Gen Z, or now the alpha generation, their visual benchmarks are video games, as opposed to previous generations' visual benchmarks. So they accept this, and they recognize this far more readily than generations before them. So there's a, maybe they embrace it better, but they're also able to be more critical of it than previous generations who, you know, we can't quite spot the AI, or we can't spot the CGI as quickly as these younger generations who can immediately pick up on it because they grew up in it. And he made that interesting comment that he said, if it's really, really good, you don't know it's there. This has been fabulous, Ruth. I learned so much from Farouk.
You've been listening to WVU Marketing Horizons, hosted by Ruth Stevens and Cindy Greenglass. The WVU College of Creative Arts and Media's online programs is honored to host these amazing guests. Please be sure to visit go.wvu.edu/mc today to hear previous discussions, listen to the Marketing Horizon series, subscribe to receive updates, as well as learn more about the renowned WVU Marketing Communications online programs.